Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
Thank you, hot chick. She's not incorrect. I am indeed William Clear. Deuce. And this is Pop Talk and Aliens, or my name isn't William Clear. Which it is, because I just confirmed hot chick was correct. Who is also not incorrect by calling this a podcast. Which it is. Or my name isn't William Clear. Which it is. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Essential Oils. Actually, it's not directly. They didn't pay me anything. But in a roundabout way, this episode is brought to you by Essential Oils. Because I don't know if you've heard of Essential Oils, but they are... they're basically like... They're little tiny little extract... Oil extracts from different herbs and flowers and things like that. And you take the, you know, take the cap off and it's got this little tiny, tiny little hole so that you can dab on little bits of different oils. And they have their different benefits, like, you know, helps you sleep. It helps you, helps with anxiety issues and different, you know, or herbal solutions to things. And they all smell really good. There's like vetiver and bergamot, lavender, all these different things. And a friend of mine, basically, I think you sell these like sort of like they sold Avon, you know, it's like they kind of franchise it out. You buy a bunch of it, you sell it to your friends. So this girl that I know gave me a couple of these different oils, and I thought, oh, this is great, you know, because I love smells and everything. I love flowers, I love herbs. And the what I didn't think of was the fact that I have God awful, horrible allergies. And these things are made from flowers and stuff. So it's like the allergies are, it was like just pouring kryptonite all over my body. And the allergies went nuts. And so if I sound stuffed up, I didn't want to keep waiting for my voice to come back perfectly to do this podcast, because I'm very excited and it's been a while since I've talked to you. So I wanted to keep it moving. So if I sound a little stuffy, that's because the stuffiness, and in by extension, this episode is brought to you by Essential Oils. I had to throw the Essential Oils away, and which is a shame. But I did take a Claritin just about 15 minutes ago, so I'm waiting for that to kick in. Which, when I think of that, it's like... the addict in me really shows itself when I say things like waiting for it to kick in, because I don't know if, I'm no longer a practicing addict, but when I think of someone who would take a Claritin or something, I don't think they would sit there, you know, like with their knee shaking, waiting for it to kick in. But an addict, definitely, I think for anything, whether it be a Claritin, a Tylenol, or a Vicodin or whatever. Vicodin was never my thing, but it makes me... I mean, if you think about like a normal person who is, you know, not an addict, doesn't have issues with stuff, but yeah, they get a hold of a Vicodin from a friend and they say, you know what, this Friday night, I'm going to take that Vicodin, I'm going to chill out, I'm going to watch some Netflix, I'm going to go to sleep. It's going to be great. That person probably takes the Vicodin with some water, whole, sits on the couch, doesn't think about it, turns on Netflix, and, you know, they just start to feel the warm glow, and they enjoy themselves, and they go to sleep. Whereas an addict is going to eat the Vicodin. There's no drinking it with water. They're going to chew it up into its most foamy, diluted form and swallow it so that it kicks in as quickly as possible. And then halfway through their first Netflix movie, they're going to be on the phone trying to get 100 more Vicodin. So that, I don't know, that's the Claritin, taking Claritin and waiting for it to kick in made me think of all that. But speaking of allergies, this is a great segue. Speaking of allergies, when people, a lot of people, especially older folk, when they have really bad allergies, their doctors will tell them to go to Arizona. Because of the dry air and everything will, you know, I guess helps dry you out and keep your sinuses from overloading and you know, your histamines and all that shit. And it was, in fact, in Arizona In 1997, at the Phoenix Lights incident happened. And this is a great story. It is a UFO story, but I'm going to talk through this story into some other things that are somewhat UFO related, but not completely. But I do want to tell you the story of the Phoenix Lights, because it's a fantastic story in that it happened in 1997. So there was technology available that allowed for recording of this thing. There were video cameras or consumer cameras that people could buy. And so there's camcorder recordings of the Phoenix Lights. You can see them on YouTube. There's a shit ton of them, which makes this a great thing, because it was on the news and it really became quite a brouhaha for a little bit, and is still one of the heavy hitters in the annals of UFO mythology. So put yourself in the evening of March 13th, 1997. A gigantic, and I mean gigantic, triangular object with reportedly 5 lights cruised over the city of Phoenix in dead silence. Seen by thousands and reported by hundreds, they say, it was said to be several football fields in length. Several football fields, obscuring the entire night sky to anyone who was, in my opinion, lucky enough to be under it and see it. And it was visible for about an hour, 45 minutes. First spotted in Henderson, Nevada, and headed south over Phoenix. But that's not what got everyone tied up in knots. There was a second event. There's always a second event in these UFO things. Like Roswell, there was the weather balloon thing, and then there was the dead alien bodies that was a separate event, got confused with the first. Same thing here. Triangular object and the second event, often confused, but different things. The second event was orbs, lights that hovered over the Phoenix horizon for quite some time before slowly dissipating one by one. And these were seen by thousands. This was reported all over the place from numerous people. And like I said earlier, the technology was available that it was videotaped. As a matter of fact, these orbs came back in the late 2000s as well. They returned, this time without their buddy, the triangular object. But again, they hovered over the horizon, slowly one by one, they disappeared. The explanation, eventually, was that they were flares. Military flares that were placed on top of the mountain and slowly were burning out one by one, as flares do. But this was not immediately offered as an explanation. As usual, there was no immediate explanation of what these things were. There were inquiries made by the governor, by city council people, by civilians, all kinds of people trying to figure out what these things were. No answer. For these people, they swear, most of them, that they couldn't possibly have been flares. When they were given the explanation of flares, they swore, it's bullshit, they're not flares. And they went to great lengths to prove this. But what gets confusing, once again, is that the triangle was not the flares. The triangle, in fact, didn't get much FaceTime on the cameras. There's only a couple of pieces of video, and they look like shit. So the orbs, thingies, flares, if you will, they get all the press. Now, as there was no immediate explanation, the governor of Arizona, this was such a brouhaha, that the governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, held a press conference. In this, he got behind his podium and he had all of his people behind him, and he said, "We have found the responsible party for this these Phoenix Lights." What happened after that is this dude in an alien costume comes walking down the aisle and goes up to the podium, and everybody has a big laugh, and the governor says, "This is just to prove that you all take yourselves way too seriously." But the explanation was not given. It wasn't until later that finally the military said, "Flares, that's all it is." But what had also happened was that the governor himself, and he didn't really come out to say this until later, actually saw the triangle as well as the orbs, and he made his own inquiries about this triangle to the Air Force, to the military. Remember, this is the governor. This is the governor of Arizona making these inquiries, and he was told no comment. And not only that, he was a former Air Force pilot himself. And he said, "I do not think these things were flares. And the thing that hovered over, the big triangle, definitely not flares." But in terms of getting press and everything, the Phoenix Lights at first weren't really that big of a deal. Now, eventually, they became a cottage industry. Documentaries, books, it comes back every few years. And as of 2016, this episode of the podcast. We're at 19 years. I can almost guarantee you that next year there'll be a big thing and they'll have a convention in Phoenix about it, and it'll get all kinds of press again. And there's again, quite a few documentaries that this is talked about on. One of the most prominent being a documentary called I Know What I Saw. And this documentary features a number of people who tried to investigate the Phoenix lights and got nowhere. It includes testimony from eyewitnesses. And it also features a regretful Governor Symington saying that he wished he had not done that whole dog and pony show with the alien coming up and, you know, going to the podium. And he regrets that because he was making fun of everyone, when in fact he did not admit this at the time. But as I said, he had seen the triangle. And then there he is, you know, look, trying to make everybody look like a jackass. And like I said, he was an Air Force pilot himself at one point. So the governor of Arizona with Air Force experience under his belt would seem to have credibility. But the thing is with these, whenever there's a UFO case, every time there's somebody who has any sort of like advanced education or is in law enforcement or is in the military, they always prop those people up. Because, you know, William Clear from Sunnyvale doesn't, you know, who cares what I say I saw in the sky? But if you're an MD, PhD, fucking dentist, anyone who has some sort of seeming credibility next to their name always gets propped up. And the reason I bring this up is because I just read a book called Phoenix Lights, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone, by an MD. This woman who wrote it is an MD. And she has a PhD write the foreword. And neither of them have any sort of insight into UFOs. They're fucking doctors. They're not like doctor of UFO. They're just regular doctors. And again, it was if you put MD, PhD, MFT, whatever, it has to carry weight, right? Because God knows, an MD would never lie. An MD would never mistake a UFO for a flare, because they went to school for a lot of years. I will say this, though, for the book written by the doctor, that it does have some fascinating pictures in it. And it has some pictures that I think are exclusive to that book. So if you ever want to read about the Phoenix Lights and you know, you want a short read, it's pretty easy stuff, but it's interesting, pick up that book, A Skeptic's Discovery That We Are Not Alone. But the governor thing is interesting because, again, he's the fucking governor. So let that simmer. Was it a spaceship or some military craft that just escaped like a wild elephant, taking a pleasure cruise over Phoenix to check out the flare show on Camelback Ridge? If it was just the flares, I wouldn't be bothering telling the story. But the fact that these two things came along at the exact same time, it's interesting. And you know what? There's nothing wrong with saying I don't know. Just telling the story and saying I don't know, you don't have to be a tough guy who laughs it off. You don't have to be someone who laps it up. I do neither. But I love these stories. And that's what I do. I tell them. My job is to shed light, not to master. That's a Robert Hunter lyric. I'm not going to take credit for it. But here's a little more fun with the Phoenix Lights. Lots of photographic research done in this thing. One news station actually went so far as to shoot the angle of Camelback Ridge during the day, trying to map it onto the same angle that one of the regular consumer video cameras took. From what they said, the mountain aligned perfectly, so these flares definitely were just things that were sitting on top of the mountain. They weren't hovering, and that's it, so they say. On the conspiracy side, on the UFO side, people have ravenously run through the recordings, software program after software program, analyzing light spectrums and depth of field and, you know, whatever else you can get from a 1997 video that was taken at night. But in either event, they say no flares. They swear it. And one of the leaders on this side is my good pal Jim Delatoso. Well, he's not my pal, but I did meet him once, because he happens to be a friend of the cousin of Mr. Charlie Crabtree and Bob Chastain, both friends of Pop Talk and Aliens. And they are, in fact, my pals. So through them, as with everything, I was able to experience the fun of Jim Delatoso for about 15 minutes once in Arizona. I didn't get to talking to him about the Phoenix Lights or anything, though. He was busy talking about alien abductions. And that is one thing that I promise you, dear listeners, I will never do a show on. Because for all of the excitement of UFOs and lights in the skies and crashes and
Abductions to me, there's nothing. There's nothing. There's stories of sleep paralysis and big black eyes and in some cases anal probes and stuff like that. And I can't get behind it. So I'm not going to waste your time with that at any point. But back to Jim DeLatoso. He claimed over the years, for quite a while, he might still be looking at this thing, I don't know, but for a long time he was saying he performed all kinds of computer analysis of photographs and videos, and he was convinced that not only were these things not flares, they were not of this earth. He used a program called Image Pro Plus. I looked up Image Pro Plus. It's a pretty decent piece of software for photo analysis and shit like that. I don't know what it was capable of in 1997, but it is a powerful piece of software. And to be fair to Jim, he was working at a place called Valley Labs, I believe, in Tempe, where they worked on supercomputers and stuff. So, you know, whatever he was using to analyze these things, it wasn't just some bullshit. Well, it kind of might have been some bullshit, because the makers of Image Pro Plus, when asked about DeLatoso's work, said, you can't do the kind of analysis he's talking about with that software, especially against 1997 VHS tape. But it's worth it to let him have his say, because he says that through histograms and 3D replications of the angles, he could tell that the lights were hovering over the mountain. They weren't flares. They weren't sitting on the ground. They were hovering way too long for flares. He used, comparison shots of actual flares and not flares. And so, of course, if they're not flares, they're not of this earth. But that's what conspiracy people do. They come up with these crazy reasons why it had to be a conspiracy or why it had to be a UFO, and they will not let it go. Even if that means sitting in front of a piece of software analyzing some shitty 1997 home camcorder shot at night. But for all that bullshit, on the skeptic side, what do? They take whatever the official explanation is and they stick it on their sleeve as if somehow like they came up with it, as if it belonged to them. Not all of them. There's a couple that are actually pretty fair. Skeptic.com, run by Michael Shermer. That guy, more on the fair side. He does a little bit of his own research, and he doesn't just copy and paste an existing explanation. And he admits that there are cases where something, you know, things are a conspiracy. But for many others, most other skeptics, they just clickbait your way into their website, and they get themselves on the History Channel by repeating someone else's answers. Because there's a difference between a skeptic and a debunker. A skeptic, like I said before, leaves the possibilities open until they get some evidence, enough evidence to where they say, no, it didn't happen, which is usually what they do. But a debunker just acts like an asshole. They just act like an asshole, they call people names, and they move on to their next opportunity to be on TV. And for the sake of illustrating this, I'm going to single one of them out. This is the guy who runs theskeptoid.com. Not to be confused with theskeptic.com. Theskeptoid.com. This motherfucker. His name is Brian Dunning. He puts out every conspiracy on his website and then attaches the official explanation of everything and rewrites it as if he had anything to do with it. And then he throws in a bunch of pejoratives against conspiracy people, acts like a dick. For example, on the Phoenix Lights issue, he wrote some piece about how they were flares, which, information that you get from anywhere. You don't need the Skeptoid to reveal this to you. But anyway, in this article, he makes fun of Arizona people as dumb cowboys in the beginning and then ends the article with the line, they were flares. Deal with it. Deal with it? I mean, the reason a guy like this exists is because, if I can give you my dollar's worth of psychoanalysis on him, guys like this, I really believe they want to be proven wrong. So badly. He wants to be proven wrong. He wants a dead alien body to show up. And because of this, he takes to making fun of people, deal with it. Who in their right mind spends their whole life talking about something they don't believe? This is very much like the conversation I had in our last podcast with Charlie Crabtree. Charlie pointed out that all the people that hate Star Wars know Star Wars backward and forward, particularly the prequels. They bag on it, they rip on it. Meanwhile, they've got the toys, they've got posters, they've got the fucking DVD collections, they bought it again on Blu-ray. Who spends that much time on something they don't like, or in this case, on something they don't believe? Even an atheist will talk about how he doesn't believe in God all the time, but he'll at least worship science. I do mean worship. I'll do a whole show on those guys, those atheists, the new atheists, actually. The Great Hitchens, he'll get his own show for sure, but Richard Dawkins, Sam Harris, Dan Dennett, Ricky Gervais, Bill Maher, for that matter, we'll do a show on those dudes. That'll be a good one, because militant atheism is fascinating stuff. But anyway, back to the skeptoid, Mr. Brian Dunning. He loves to criticize anybody who he feels perpetuates conspiracy theories. And at one point on his hit list was Joe Rogan. Joe had he had this skeptoid guy on. And this Dunning guy went on and on about how Joe Rogan perpetuates conspiracy theories. You know, right to his face, to his credit, Dunning went and faced the music. But he could not corner Joe Rogan, because talking about conspiracy theories is not perpetuating conspiracy theories, as I am doing here. I'm not going to sit here and tell you that the Phoenix Lights were fucking spaceships, but a lot of people would, and I'm going to tell you about their shit. And I'm going to talk about what the official story is. You make up your own mind. But anyway, this guy Dunning is trying to corner Joe Rogan, and Rogan is having none of it, to the point where he actually turns the table on this skeptoid dude, to where the guy is actually making arguments he simply cannot stand on. And he finally gets to the point where he says, he's so trapped in his own bullshit that he says, let's just move on. And Joe Rogan will not let him move on. It's a good episode. Look it up. Brian Dunning on Joe Rogan. Although Joe Rogan does become somewhat of a softie on this guy, and he kind of lets him off the hook instead of just kicking his fucking ass. And Joe Rogan's kind of become a softie in general. In his later years, I miss the days of him being suspicious of fuckery around other conspiracies, and he barely believes anything anymore. But anyway, that's a great podcast, and so is this one. So my point is, a guy like the Skeptoid eventually falls off his own wagon because he's a spokesmouth for the official stories. This guy wasn't able to conjure up his own ideas in order to make a point. He applied the same skeptic logic to every single conspiracy, one size fits all. And that's just not how it works. Every one of these stories, these UFO stories, they all have their own plot, their own characters, and one size never fits all. Plus, then you get into the fake moon landings, 9/11, secret societies. You can't apply an explanation to every single one of them. And that explanation usually is, well, the official story's been proven and you just can't deal with it. There are flares. Deal with it. But the conspiracy theorists do the same thing. The lying government, secretly controlling everything, covering up everything. False flags and misdirection, and disinformation, the Jews, every time. In the conspiracy theorist's mind, the government is like a team of Greek gods with unlimited power to cover up and orchestrate, talk to aliens. People like Alex Jones. Alex Jones is the opposite of a skeptoid. For him, everything is a conspiracy. Everything. What separates him, though, from a guy like the Skeptoid is that he's not just spouting someone else's stuff. He comes up with this shit on his own. And he may make up half of it, but the other half? Lots of bullshit, but at least he makes you think. And he screams all the time, so how can you go wrong with that?
Nobody can stop them. They're having their way with America. They want our guns. And if you're not with them, cops and military, then you will declare that you're with the Republic now. And don't tell me that I'm a weirdo because I'm upset about this and I should only go get upset about my favorite football team winning or losing. Listen, I know what tyranny means. I know the bankers are putting poison in our food and water. I know the bankers have stolen $8.5 trillion. I know we're under War Powers Act. I know they're hurting us. I know they're carrying out New World Order. I know they staged those terror attacks. You know what it's like to gut up to this and go out every day and go past the peer pressure and come out day one and say 9/11 was an inside job and lose most of the radio stations I was on? You know what it's like to go to sleep every night knowing you work for a bunch of psychotic killers and you bastards are probably going to end up killing me one day? You know what it's like knowing you've ruined my life? You know what it's like, you sons of bitches? I'm tired of your crap. You commit evil, you're part of an evil system, and we're standing up against you. And the Republic is going to defeat you in the end. Some of us won't make it personally through this, but a lot of us are. And in the end, you are going to be brought to justice for all the kids you've kidnapped for CPS, all you CPS workers, all you corrupt bureaucrats, all you that have had your way with innocent children over and over again and who think your evil's invincible. You're not invincible, and God is going to deal with you. And you are cursed to hell.
If you were to give me 100 articles from the Skeptoid and 100 articles from Alex Jones' InfoWars website, if one of the Alex Jones articles is right and one of the Skeptoid's articles is wrong, that's two conspiracies. And that immediately cancels out the logic that there are no conspiracies. What are the odds of 100 Alex Jones conspiracies being bullshit and 100 of the official explanations listed on the Skeptoid being right. That it's impossible. It's 0%. And as a matter of fact, Alex Jones has been right about things. And there have been conspiracies. Watergate. That's the one that always gets trotted out there. So let me trot it out too. Both sides love this example. Because the conspiracy theorist says, see, there are conspiracies. And the skeptic says, yeah, it was a conspiracy, but they didn't cover it up. They're bumbling idiots. They couldn't cover up anything. If they couldn't cover up a hotel break-in, how could they cover up a UFO? That's one failed conspiracy. At some point, a conspiracy is successful. And I will give you another example of one that was. If you see the movie The Imitation Game, starring the great Benedict Cumberbatch, you will see in the American government's attempt to crack the Nazi radio codes, they were successful. And they had to do things that they did not want to do, like let soldiers die so they wouldn't give it away. But tons of information about that whole program was kept secret successfully for years. And it wasn't found out by anyone. It was simply released. Even in this movie, there are new facts that are revealed that nobody knew before. It does work once in a while. Sometimes the government is smart enough to cover something up. Certainly not all the time. And like I said, they're not a bunch of fucking Greek gods that can talk to aliens. Most of the time, it's not a conspiracy. But the difference between asking legitimate questions versus throwing out any wild conspiracy is this. If you look again at classic conspiracy theories, JFK, Roswell, 9/11, take those. Those were all so prominent and so questioned that they were investigated by the government. We had the Warren Report for JFK, we had the Project Blue Book for UFOs, the 9/11 Commission. It wasn't just a bunch of people screaming on the radio. The aforementioned Phoenix Lights, not investigated. But as we said before, the governor of Arizona did do his own private investigation and had the door slammed in his face. So investigations happen. And many times, probably most times, almost every time, the standard reasoning given is correct. But that is not going to stop a good conspiracy theorist. And here's a recent example of a doozy. This one did not get an investigation, but many wanted one. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia died recently, as you know. And conservative, professional right-wing lunatic Michael Savage suggested that Justice Scalia was murdered by Democratic operatives so that they could push through a new Supreme Court appointment before the end of Barack Obama's term. Savage said that it was one of the most suspicious deaths in our lifetime. And he played Godfather music under it while he was saying it, which is great. All points to Dr. Savage for doing that. That's entertainment. But this is, in terms of the conspiracy, this is not the first time that supposedly a conservative has been murdered by liberal operatives, according to Savage. He also suggested that conservative blogger Andrew Breitbart, who, like him or not, that guy could fucking write, but Savage suggested that he was also murdered by operatives on the left. The thing is, a guy like Savage, he's not even a conspiracy theorist by nature, but it's a good example of the kinds of conspiracy theories that ruin themselves. Why no investigation of Scalia's death? Because he clearly died of a heart attack. But according to Savage, it's because the FBI, and I quote here, in the back pocket of Barry Obama's BlackBerry Union. This is where conspiracy theories go wrong. One explanation leads to another conspiracy, which leads to another conspiracy, doubling down on that conspiracy and doubling down on that, and each conspiracy is cloaked within another. Like the Joe Pesci line in JFK, an enigma wrapped in a riddle, and whatever he says, you know the goddamn quote. And here, though, is another place where conspiracy theories get hit all over. This is where professional skeptics make their money. A few months ago, I was driving around Gold Country, and, you know, there's a clear sky in that area because there's not a lot of lights, not a lot of cities, and I saw the goddamnedest thing. I saw, with my own two Irish eyes, this straight stream of light heading up from the ground to the sky. It looked like a spotlight was shining down If there was a helicopter in the sky shining a spotlight down on the city, that's what it looked like. However, the what would have been the helicopter was shooting rapidly straight up into the sky. The further it got, the brighter the light got. And it was amazing. And it lasted for, I don't know, several minutes. I didn't think it was a UFO, but I thought, Jesus, this is fucking amazing. Well, it wasn't a UFO. There was an explanation given right away. And by the way, before I get to that, I didn't take my camera out. See, people are always complaining, like, well, if there's so many UFOs, how come there's not more camera footage? Well, first of all, there is. And second of all, if you're looking at something as amazing like this, that is like stopping you in your tracks, I almost got in an accident, you don't have time to pull out, you know, and you're, I'm not even thinking of, I got to pull out my phone and take a picture of this and fuck with the password and get to the camera app and pull over and stop and get a good shot of it. You know, there's no time for that because it could go away at any second. For however many UFO occurrences or lights in the sky, whatever you actually see, how many of them are like what I saw? There's just no fucking time. It's too mesmerizing to be doing all this stuff. You're not thinking clearly. You're watching an alien attack. Possibly, for all you know. Thankfully, though, there were many people who did have their phones out, who were walking around, able to stop, and they put this thing all over YouTube. And apparently this thing was seen all over California. And again, this one was very credibly explained by the Navy. It was an unarmed missile being tested off the coast of LA. And in fact, all flights at LAX had been previously grounded. And they were told, you know, we're going to do this test, so we need to ground the flights for a little bit. And, you know, apparently they knew about it. They didn't have the sense to tell the rest of us, you're going to see this amazing apocalypse in the sky. I guess they didn't think it was going to be seen from the entire fucking West Coast. So they didn't inform us, but they did afterwards, and it made sense. And they, you know, they basically proved it, case closed. But something like this, an easily disprovable UFO, this is Christmas to debunkers. Not only do they get to debunk this particular occurrence, but it gives them the bullets to use for the next one that doesn't have an easy explanation. So the next time some weird sighting happens that isn't easily documented and provable as a regular occurrence, something like a Phoenix Lights, the debunker can just pull this one out and say, what about the time with the missile in LA, right? I mean, it's just the same thing happening over and over again. Why is this different? And then for the conspiracy theorists to still harp on this thing being something else than a missile test, which there are people who say it wasn't a missile test. The flights were grounded because of the UFO, the fear of a UFO and stuff. And again, they won't let it go. And this, again, they are undercutting the next time something needs an explanation. They just won't let it go. They won't let the conspiracy go, and then that's more fuel for debunkers. They're so boxed in. Conspiracy theorists are so boxed in. Everything's worth examination. The debunker says nothing's worth examination, and the same kind of thinking can be done, and it can be dangerous. Because again, sometimes, once in a great while, not every time, probably hardly any of the time, there is an actual conspiracy. I saw a documentary once about 9/11, and it was showing the conspiracy theorist view, and it was also showing the skeptic's view and the official story view. And it was really interesting because in the end, it took the official explanation side, but throughout it was actually very fair, and it was very fascinating seeing a bunch of people who thought it was a conspiracy but were clearly not lunatics versus some skeptics and some debunkers and some military people. And they had this guy on it, though. They had this psychologist who said that people who think everything is a conspiracy tend to think that because they don't want to live in a world of chaos. They want to believe that everything is under control by some mommy and daddy secret society. Even if it's sinister, they just feel better knowing that it's under control. And I think there's actually some truth to that. But I also think that similar thinking applies to people who debunk everything. I think they are also uncomfortable living in a world where the mommy and daddy have the ability to organize sinister events, to cover things up. And for them to be so powerless against this, I think that makes them feel uncomfortable and propels them into denying all of it. And I also think, as I said earlier in the show, that there are conspiracy debunkers who actually really want to believe. And they get so fucking pissed off that they're just begging for someone to prove them wrong. But that's all I can say about conspiracy theorists, about debunkers. I like to lie in the middle of it. I like to sit back and enjoy the show. And speaking of shows, here's another great segue. Let me tell you about what, in my opinion, was the greatest UFO hoax of all time. In my opinion, there have been three good UFO hoaxes in our recent time. Now, there's been tons, obviously. There's been, most of them, though, are like pictures, black and white, grainy, with like some fuzzy black thing against the sky, or like something that looks like a plate, like a dish, pot cover, floating around. But there's been three that they really went to great lengths to try to fool us. And they're worth mentioning because they put on a good production, all three of these, but especially the last one. So I will go down 3-2 to the number one best hoax. Number three, the alien autopsy. Now, this was in, I think, either the late 80s or the early 90s. And what these people did was that they put together a doll, like a life-size doll, of a gray alien. And they put him on this autopsy table, and they got people in these 1940s doctor outfits, and they made the room look like it was totally from the 40s or 50s. And they're cutting this thing open, and they're showing all these close-ups, and they have like the perfect grain on the film. The film legitimately looks like it's from the time. And they actually had special effects experts analyze this and say, you know, that's either real or it's fucking great special effects. Well, it turned out to be great special effects. And eventually, I think at least one of the people came forward and said, yeah, we just did this with an old Kodak camera, and we found some old film stock. And I mean, this thing, though, you might have seen it if you are into this sort of thing at all. It was all over the place for a while. Or go to YouTube and check out Alien Autopsy. It's, you know, it's, they did good work, and they should be commended for their attempt. Now, number two, and I actually rank this one better than the Alien Autopsy, even though it's faker, because it's so entertaining. This was also the early 90s, and it was called The Alien Interview. Now, this was, the premise was that they got footage of a couple of government agents interviewing a gray alien. It's like, you know, it looks all grainy. It looks pretty legitimate in some ways. It kind of looks like maybe this is the real thing. If you just were looking at it, no sound, and you had no idea what it was supposed to be. And the way the alien moves, like when they cut back from the two guys interviewing it to the alien. And when the alien moves, he moves in this sort of like herky-jerky motion that's actually kind of disturbing. Like if this was real, if it turned out that this was an actual real occurrence that was filmed, I'd be freaked out by this thing. It's like jerks around, and it's kind of creepy. And then the government agent guy, there's one guy who's interviewing him, and there's one guy next to him who cannot stop smoking. He can't stop smoking. It's one cigarette after another. And if memory serves, and I hope I'm right, and if I'm wrong, I don't want to know. If memory serves, this guy did nothing but smoke during the alien interview while the other guy actually did the questions, and the alien jerked around his every answer. Now, this thing was proved to be a hoax, like, immediately. Like, there was no special effects people, like, analyzing and saying, good job. It was just, this is bullshit, but, you know, applause, because it's hilarious. But now for number one. In 2011, multiple videos started surfacing of a light that dropped down directly over Jerusalem at night, hovers for a few seconds, and then shoots back up into the sky like a bullet and disappears. This thing looked amazing, but what really sold it, there were three videos of this, all submitted to YouTube, which is like, that's like hoax killer, right? Three different videos. Fox News reported this thing and showed the video, and the woman who reported the story is clearly freaked out by it. I mean, like, visibly disturbed, and she admits it right there on the air. Like, this woman is freaked out by this because this wasn't some hovering light. It's over Jerusalem, and it shoots back up into the sky like some sort of angel or spaceship or something, and it's Jerusalem. It's brilliant. And to talk more about the three cameras, this is how well this was done. Two of the videos were stable and distant from Jerusalem, and they kind of shook. But the third video actually zooms into the light, which is incredibly hard to fake. It zooms in, and then it zooms back so that it gets a little bit closer to the light, then pulls back so you can see it shooting up into the sky. Now, it's easy in a program like After Effects to add a light and move it around and take that from two different still angles and match the timing. But to zoom in and out, you have to track the motion of the camera, the distance to the target, match the shakes. That is not easy. Not easy. And so when you put these three things together, it looks real as hell. Or heaven, I guess, in this case. But here's where it started to become exposed as a hoax. Reason number one, the videos were all submitted anonymously. Which, if you saw this thing and caught it on camera, are you really just going to throw it up on YouTube under some no-name account? Three times? Thrice? And then number two, and probably the most damning, there were not any accounts of anyone else seeing this thing. That's a dead giveaway. If they don't see anything, but you have videotapes of this ridiculous light hovering and shooting back up, if this thing happened, everyone would have freaked out. Now, the other thing that hurt this video doesn't carry as much weight, but it's worth mentioning. One of the skeptics, and he was supposedly a videographer or something, for Live Science, said that he could see that they use motion tile effects and edge mirroring to simulate the camera shake. Now, I don't know what this dude's experience is, but you need to be a real pro to recognize something like that. An experienced special effects or compositing expert could definitely find that out, but I mean, you can't just be some guy. I think he was just throwing around terms, but either way, yes, it was ultimately proven to be a hoax, more for the first two reasons than that. And I believe one of the dudes confirmed it, so no dice on the religious alien spaceship. But massive points to these guys for putting on a show. Oh, and one other thing about the Live Science guy. He actually said in his, debunking report that the fact that the UFO appeared over Jerusalem was ironic because for many, belief in UFOs is based on faith, not evidence. Now, what? Are there people who believe in UFOs only on faith? I mean, are there people who are walking around who've never seen anything in the sky and have never seen like a videotape that they decided, yeah, that's a UFO, but they just believe it? They just believe that UFOs are floating around? I mean, I guess. But this whole Jerusalem hoax thing fascinated me it's fascinated me ever since it happened 5 years ago. And it made me think about how you could create the perfect UFO hoax. And I've come up with this. All right, first of all, you're going to need like at least 10 people with cameras. You're going to need 10 different videos. But the first thing you have to do, you get all your different cameras, you got to make them all different, iPhones, shitty phones, real cameras, put them all together at the same exact time, synchronize and shoot your different backgrounds. And some have got to zoom in, some have got to shake, and so on. But what you need to do before you actually shoot your background that you're going to add your UFO to is that you have to have something real in the sky for people to report. Now, you don't want it to be too long because you don't want anybody else getting a video of it. Now, depth perception is entirely screwed up at night. People have done UFO hoaxes where they've literally shot up like, you know, a remote control plane that they doctored up with extra lights and they had it, you know, hurl around in the sky for a little while in an area that's not extremely populated, and people saw it and they'd call MUFON and the Mutual UFO Network where people call in their sightings and they send it to the news and everything. So it was well done, but you know, it doesn't take much. Because again, at night, you don't know how far something is from you. People are always saying like, it's about 100, you know, feet up in the air. You don't know that. It's a semi-educated guess at best. So for this hoax, you got to put something up in the sky. Similar, you know, use the same type of trick. Use a remote control helicopter. There was one case where there was a massive UFO sighting once where people saw all of these orange orbs floating through the sky, like a ton of them. And they reported them, and it was, you know, local news and stuff. And then what happened was this local couple that had gotten married had done a ceremony where it was at night, and they launched these balloon orange things up into the sky that were, like, you know, lit internally. I guess like those Chinese lantern type of things. And when they saw this on the news, they were like, oh my God, that was our stuff from the wedding. That was those things that we let go. So they called and said, you know what, this is, sorry, we didn't mean to, you know, freak anybody out. We were just having a wedding. And it's that kind of thing that gives a great example of lack of depth perception, because people thought these were these huge lights, but they were just balloon lanterns. So anyway, back to the hoax. All right, so you got that part. Use a remote control plane or, you know, yellow lantern, whatever. Get it up into the sky for a very short amount of time, enough to where some people will see it, and you'll have eyewitness testimony. Next, you shoot your backgrounds all from different angles, like I said, and then you got to put them into your editing software, and you got to know what you're doing. You can't have digital camera shakes. You're going to have to go through the trouble of matching up the actual shaking of the camera to the actual shaking of your UFO. So everybody's got to do that, and they've all got to maintain the integrity of whatever kind of media they shot it on, whether it be an iPhone or an Android or a camcorder. Each one has to look real in and of itself. Now, once you've got all these, you've got to start submitting them to YouTube, to the news, some anonymously, some not. Somebody's got to take the hit and be the person who says, yes, I videotaped this and I saw it. If the hoax is good enough, you're going to get off the hook, my friend. But I want to make it very clear that I am not condoning illegal activity. So let me tell you how it works. There's no law against lying. You know, in court and stuff, you swear on the Bible, and then, you know, if you tell a lie, you're in perjury and all that stuff. There's no law that says you can't walk around life putting a balloon up in the sky and trying to make people think it was a UFO. Where the rub is that it cannot harm anyone. So you can't do something that's going to have people driving off the freaking road because they're terrified, or, you know, people going and making a Heaven's Gate cult because they saw this UFO. So you have to do it very methodically and make sure that you're not putting anyone in immediate danger. If you can do that and just put a hoax out there that interests everybody and gets everybody buzzing, you're fine. But again, I am not condoning that you do this. I'm simply throwing it out there as a theoretical of what the perfect UFO hoax would be. So, next part. Here's what you do. You now have your eyewitnesses lined up. Now you have your video submitted to YouTube and to the news and so forth. And you also, it has to be staggered a little bit. You can't all go on 9 o'clock at night and throw all this stuff up. Okay? And you gotta, like, if you're using, like, location services from YouTube and everything, you have to use a proxy address so that it looks like it came from somewhere else. You know? Gotta be, like, a different amount of cities in the surrounding area so that it has some credibility. It's not just a bunch of people that were in Sunnyvale and shot the Sunnyvale UFO lights and, yeah, you gotta have one that saw it from Mountain View, and, you know, one of it saw it from Santa Clara and so forth. So you gotta be meticulous here. And again, when you go into your editing programs or something, it would probably be best to get someone who is an actual super uber expert in all this, who can just do each one of them his or herself. Now, once you've done that, you can't be a rat, all right? Nobody can be a rat in this. Nobody can be a stool pigeon. You all gotta just say, we've done it. We're never admitting anything. All we're ever gonna say is, hey, dude, I saw this. I shot it. What do you want from me? And that's, my friends, how we can perpetrate. Not we. I'm not gonna do it. I'm just saying this is how it could be done. The perfect UFO hoax. And that is my show, Pop Talk and Aliens, for this edition. Now, I know it was a long time between our last episode and this one, but I want to assure you that our next episode after this will be coming very soon, because in just a couple of days, I am going to be interviewing Carla Kane and Coy Huynh from The Corner Laughers. And I interviewed Charlie Crabtree from The Corner Laughers on our Star Wars episode, so I will now have three of the four. And I will get Casey Bowman. I will get Casey Bowman, and we will have all four Corner Laughers on this show. So Carla Kane, Coy Huynh, that's going to be next week that I talk to them, so probably by next weekend, you'll have another Pop Talkin' Aliens to look forward to. And there might be a mystery guest on that episode too, but I don't want to say too much. So we'll see. So that's what you got to look forward to. Going to be talking to some other people coming up soon about some different types of music and do some wide variety of subject matter here on Pop Talkin' Aliens. And I do want to make one program note that last couple episodes I've been touting the fact that Charlie Crabtree and I would be reviewing Elton John's new album, Wonderful Crazy Nights. Now, that'll still happen to some degree at some point. But in terms of dedicating a whole show to that, I have to say that I don't think it's something that would interest you for an extended period of time. Reason being, Elton John should be commended for being able to come out with an album every 3 years at the age of 69. But the quality of each album varies. The last two albums were fantastic. They weren't Captain Fantastic, but they were fantastic. Wonderful Crazy Night is solid, but it's not great. And I don't know that it's worth a track-by-track granular breakdown with me and Charlie commenting on every little thing. But at some point, we'll sit around for another episode about something else, and we'll take time to go through it a little bit and give you our ideas. But whole episode on that, you don't want that. Trust me. So that's it for this edition. I thank you so much for listening. We've had a lot of subscribers come in lately, and I'm humbled and appreciative, so I want to give you good material, solid material. So if it takes a few extra days, I promise it's worth it. But our next episode will be very soon. Hope you enjoyed this one. Cue the hot chick.
Pop Talk and Aliens, the William Clear Podcast.
They want our guns!